Hi, this is Dan Wallin. In this lab exercise, we're going to walk through how we can use WCF RIA services and integrate that into a Silverlight client. And along the way, I'm going to show you how we can first off create an entity framework model. From there, we'll tie that into a domain service. And once that's made, we're going to expose the domain service down to the Silverlight client. We'll also talk about some pretty cool features in RIA services, such as the ability to share business rules and some validation logic across your client and your server projects. So to get started, I'm going to go into Visual Studio, and we're going to create a new project. But I'm going to create one that, if you haven't done it before, might be a little bit new. So up to this point in the lab exercises, we've created a Silverlight application, and we've also created a navigation application if you've been through some of the earlier labs. Well, in this one, we're going to select the Silverlight business application. And what the business application does for us is ties in the navigation application, so we get a very easy framework we can use to have multiple screens. But it also adds in the ability to call a domain service, which we're going to talk about more, and what you'll build in the actual different lab exercises. So I'm going to go ahead and give this a name of Using RIA Services. And we'll go ahead and select this Silverlight business application. And right off the bat, it'll just automatically create the Silverlight and the web project. So it's a little bit different than some of the others. So you'll notice as this is loading, normally if you do a Silverlight application or a navigation one, you'll be prompted to create the web application, whether it's an MVC, a website, or a just standard WAP, web application project. But with RIA services in the business template, there's some special plumbing that needs to go on the server side. And then on the client side, there's some stuff that's also built in. In fact, you can see that showing up here in the Solution Explorer. So once this gets done loading, what we're going to do now is go in, and the first thing I need is some data. So out of the box, WCF RIA Services works with Link to SQL or Entity Framework, but you can even create your own domain service. So you can actually use anything you want. But out of the box, that's kind of what's supported and kind of gets you going quickly, and a lot of code's written for you. All right, so I'm going to come to the server project, to the web project here. And you'll notice that right off the bat, we have a models folder. And this models folder has some registration data and user data, and that's because RIA Services has built-in login capability. Now, the nice part about all this, and thus the name WCF RIA Services, is that this is all built on Windows Communication Foundation, and so a lot of the principles you may already know apply. It's just that RIA Services kind of abstracts us away from having to worry about some of that type of plumbing, and it really makes it pretty easy to do different things. So the first thing I'm going to do is, now that we have a little bit it's added, we need to add in an entity framework model. So I'm going to add into our app data folder an existing item, which is going to be an AdventureWorks Lite database. And so I'm going to run off to our lab folders. And actually, we can go right in the starting point folder, and there's the MDF. So let's add that in. And the next thing I'm going to do is, once we have our database, we need to go ahead and wrap that database in something that we can talk to it. Now, we could use raw ADO.NET code here as well, and even use that with RIA Services. But it's actually quite a bit easier, to just go in and make an entity model. Now, you can use Link to SQL as well, but I'm going to right-click on my models folder. We'll say add new item, and then I'm going to go to my data section. And we're going to click on the ADO.NET entity data model. Now, this is one that, if you've done some of the previous labs, you'll have already been through this type of exercise. It's pretty quick to go through. So I'm going to call this AdventureWorks Lite, LT. And from there, we'll go ahead and add that in. Okay, now we can either create a model from scratch and push it to the database. But in this case, I obviously have a database. We're going to select that. So I'll just hit Next. Selected my database. And then we're going to go ahead and pick a couple items here. Now, I'm going to go ahead and select three or four items. But I'm only going to expose two of those through the domain service that we're going to create in just a minute here. So I'm going to navigate into the tables. And I kind of want to talk about why this is important. So I'm going to select, we're going to do Customer. Let's come down and do sales order header, which is the orders, details on those orders, and maybe product. So I'm going to select four items. Now the reason I'm doing that is because a lot of times you may need to expose or use these four particular tables, which will ultimately be entities you can query. But in the Silverlight app, you may only need, say, two or maybe only three of those. Well, by creating the model with everything we need, the nice thing with WCF RIA services is we can tell it what to expose, and for security reasons, the things we don't want to expose, we can just take those out. Pretty easy. So I'm going to hit finish, and you'll see that we should have four items show up on my entity framework diagram here. So that'll show up, and then what we'll do with that is we're going to wrap it with our first WCF domain service, RIA services. All right. So there we go. So there's my product and my customer and my different orders that are available. All right, from here, now what we're going to do is you'll notice that we have a services folder here. And this currently has some authentication data that's inside of, or some code, I should say. So I'm now going to go in and add in a new domain service that'll wrap that entity framework model that you just saw. So let's go ahead and do that. So we're just going to right-click. We'll add a new item. And I'm going to come back to the web and scroll down just a little bit in that area. And we'll see domain service down in here somewhere. There we go, right there. All right, now a domain service is going to be the wrapper around our service calls. So this is going to be the class that we're going to call into from Silverlight and that will automatically, underneath the covers, use WCF plumbing. And so let's go ahead and we'll call this AdventureWorks LT Domain Service. I like to be fairly explicit and always add the keyword domain service. Of course, you don't have to, but I kind of like that. So let's double check the work there. Looks good. And we'll go ahead and add that in. Now we're going to get prompted with a wizard, and it's going to automatically show nothing. And the reason that we see nothing is the entity model's there. However, it automatically will find any entity or link to SQL models that are in your project if you've built. So one of the things you'll want to do, and you'll quickly learn this as you do it, is make sure you build. So let's go ahead and we'll come on in. And let's just build that project there. Looks like it succeeded. Now we'll come and we'll basically do the same type of thing. And that's kind of just a little time saver tip. Every now and then I'll still forget anyway, but very easy to fix if you don't see it show up. So let's put that in one more time. AdventureWorks domain. And now that it's built, we should automatically see the class show up for us. All right, and there we go. So you'll notice that we now have our entities, and those entities, maybe we don't need to expose all those to our client. So I'm going to go ahead and expose customer as just kind of read-only, no editing. I'm also going to go in and do sales order header, but I want that to be editable. All right, a couple other things to point out. When you're using Silverlight, you'll want to go in and leave this enable client access box checked. Bottom line is if you don't, it's not going to work right. If you wanted to expose some read-only OData endpoints, then you could check this box. Now, we're not going to use that in this lab, but you could certainly go in and change that if you'd like. And just check the box, and you'll be able to make read-only queries into the REST APIs. We're going to go ahead and leave the defaults. Now, the final thing I want to point out is at the bottom here, we have generate associated classes for metadata. And I always leave that checked, because what it'll do is, number one, save you a lot of code. But you're going to see how I'm going to use that to do some custom validation logic a little bit later in lab exercise 3 of this lab. So let's go ahead and we'll hit OK there. All right, so this makes our service. So if I scroll down a little bit, you'll notice here's my service class called AdventureWorks LT Domain. I think I meant to put domain service, but that's okay. We'll go with it. And then we have link to entities domain service is what it's inheriting from. And you'll notice of type, and there's my AdventureWorks entity framework model. All right, so let's come on down and take a look at what we have in here. So right off the bat, you'll notice it, based on the objects I told it to do read-only or editable, customers was read-only. And therefore, it only put in the simple query to just return all the customers. All right, now we're going to change that up in just a little bit to join in some data and return some other things. We also have this get sales order headers here. which I'm going to rename to Get Orders by Customer ID in just a moment. So first thing I'm going to do, though, is let's come in here, and I just have a little a link query that I customized, and I'm going to drag that guy in. So this just does a simple join. And you'll see, as we look through the code here, that we're going to select our customers, and then we're going to join in our sales order headers, which is basically the order objects, based upon the customer ID. So we have the primary foreign key. We can bump that down so you can see it a little bit better. And then we're going to order by last name and return all those customers. So we should now be able to join in all the customers and the orders into this one particular query and return that out. All right, scrolling on down, the next thing we're going to do is I'm going to go ahead and leave. You'll notice I made the checkbox. I checked it in the wizard and said I wanted sales order header to be editable. Well, what that did is it automatically generates the select operation, and then it also generates the insert, the update, and the delete, and it writes all that code for us. Now, this code right here is added, and it automatically handles everything you need for that object, assuming it's just a normal update, insert, or delete for the sales order header object. At the end, though, which is it's a bonus exercise in the lab, I'll discuss briefly how we can actually use another project to create a custom domain service that isn't relying on putting the code right inside of each of the methods. I like to abstract that out generally. Okay, so having said that, let's go back up, and I'm going to call this one Get Orders by Customer ID. And Get Orders by Customer ID is simply going to take the customer ID as a parameter, and then we're going to add just a little bit of code in here to return the sales order header. But we want to do it where, and I'm just going to do a simple lambda inside of here, where the sales order header customer ID equals the customer ID that was passed in, and we're going to go ahead and return that out. And so we're going to return this iQueryable of sales order header. So very simple modification there, but now we can just get the orders based upon what customer was selected in the Silverlight application. All right, and that's about all we're going to do inside of this particular domain service. So we could even, just to point out a couple extra things, Microsoft is nice enough to add in a commented area here which says requires authentication. And if you want to authenticate your site and want to lock this down, that's where you'd go. And you can go ahead and simply mark that, and then your security administrator can mark the appropriate folders with security, different groups or users. So there's a lot more you can do, but to start us off, that's what we're going to do. So we have our get customers and orders. So that ends what you'll do in exercise one of this particular lab on WCF RIA services. So now what we're going to do is go into the second part of the exercise. We're going to create the user interface for this. And so what I've done there is this user interface is based upon what was also done in the WCF lab exercise. So rather than recreating that or even cutting and pasting anything in, I'm going to go ahead and run on over to a different project where that UI has already been created. So let me go ahead and open that up. And if you did the WCF Services Lab, this will show you what's involved there. Same exact user interface. We're going to have a combo box for customers. We're going to have a data grid for the orders. And we're going to have a data form control, which will be to show the details on the orders. All right, so if we come on down, you'll see that I have my AdventureWorks domain services already in here, and this is going to have the exact same code that you put in exercise one of this lab, and you'll see that right there. So we're going to go ahead and write some code now where we can call this. So let's talk about the user interface real quick, though. So in the lab exercise, it's going to have you drag on several controls, as mentioned earlier, a combo box, a data grid, and a data form, and then modify some of the properties. You're going to add columns into the data grids like you see here. So we have order date, ship method, subtotal, and total due. What we're going to do now is we're going to go in and actually customize this and make it so we can call the domain service. Now the first thing I'm going to do, though, is you might wonder, how do we call a service without making a proxy object. And the good news is there, with WCF RIA services, we don't have to. It kind of takes care of some of that for us, which really simplifies things, I think. So I'm going to go ahead and build. Let's do a build here on our solution. And what this will do is now generate, I'll have to do the show hidden files trick you can do with the Solution Explorer, but now that we've built, because these two projects were hooked together, if I go into our Silverlight app and show all files, you'll notice that we now have this generated code folder. Well, this using RIA services web.g.cs is doing all the heavy lifting for us. That is our proxy object, or what we're going to call the domain context. So in exercise two, you're going to go in and create the user interface, and then we're going to enhance that in exercise three and four. So let's go ahead and build that code in. So now that we have our proxy, and again, you don't have to right-click and add service reference or anything like that. You simply go in and build. Let's go ahead and take the hidden files off. And now we have our user interface. So we're going to assume I've already been through exercise two. I've already drug on the different items that you see here. One thing to mention, you will need the Silverlight toolkit in order to use the data form control. The lab exercise will mention that right at the top, tell you where to download that. Okay, so the next thing up is we need to go in and add some code, and I want to be able to handle the case where this button is clicked, as an example. There's a navigated to. I want to write some code to load the combo box with some data. In the selection change of the combo box, I want to be able to handle that, and we're going to have a little bit more we'll add into there. So I'm going to go ahead and fill that in. So the onNavigated to is called when all the controls are loaded and when the user is now officially navigated to the user interface. So think of it kind of like the loaded event for a navigation application. You can still use loaded if you want. This one's already added for you, though, so it's a really easy thing to do. So let's come down into the toolbox, and I just have a couple things we're going to drag on here. So we're going to drag on the onNavigated to code, and we'll talk about that. Or I'm going to create a context in just a moment. And we also have some code here for selection changed. And we'll come down to that in just a moment. And then finally, we have some code for the button click. Okay, now you'll notice I got a little underscore context object here that's red. So what I want to do is, just like you would do with a WCF proxy object, I need to create an instance of my go-between between the Silverlight app and the server app. And so the way we do that is we simply name it. So if we called the service AdventureWorks Lite Domain Service, then we should be able to come in and you'll see AdventureWorks Lite LT Domain Context. Now this is the code that was added in that generated code folder that we talked about earlier. So let's come into here, we're going to go ahead and call it context, and we'll simply create a new instance of it. All right, now we're going to make that a class level variable because I want to go in and make sure that we reuse that across the different methods. You could create it per method call, of course, as well, but we're going to go ahead and reuse it in this example. All right, so let's go full screen here and talk about what's going on. So the first thing we're going to do, unlike WCF, when you make a regular WCF services call, you have to handle the asynchronous callback. And we did that in the previous lab exercise. Well, in this particular lab, since we're using WCF RIA services, they make it a lot more simple. You can still handle the callback. That's still possible. But what we're going to do is just tell it, hey, off of the context object, the proxy has this customer's property. And when this particular screen is navigated to, I want to go ahead and bind that to the item source. Now the item source, of course, that's going to take over on the combo box and kind of everything will run from there. But that doesn't actually load the data. That just tells the context that, hey, when this customer does get loaded with some data, I want to go ahead and sign it. All right, the way we actually do the load is right down below. So you'll notice the next line of code, we do the same thing. We say I want to grab the sales order header object, the collection, bind that to the data grid item source. And then I'm going to go ahead and officially load the combo box from there. So what that's going to do is we say context.load and then load, if we look at the IntelliSense here, you'll notice it takes this thing called an entity query. Well, it just so happens if you call on the server side your method getCustomers, then when the proxy gets generated, it's going to call that getCustomers query. And so we're going to leverage that getCustomers query and use that or feed it into the load method that will execute it. The cool thing is here with this particular code, I don't even have to worry about my asynchronous call. It's abstracted from me. Now, there is a way, there's an overload with the load here that we're not going to do in this lab exercise, but it's available. And you can go in on that load and actually handle the callback, because oftentimes, you know, you might want to know if there was an error or some other thing happened. But for this one, we're just going to load it. We're going to assume that our code is kind of bulletproof here. All right. Now, it goes without saying, I may want to go in and add some try-catch blocks around this as well. But we'll leave that as an exercise for you to go through. Coming on down. So when the combo box loads with some data, we want to go in now, and we need to grab that customer ID from the combo box, which is going to have the customers. And if you recall, back in the service, we had that get orders by customer ID call that we want to make. So what we're going to do is we're simply going to grab the customer ID, and we do that if you're coming from the web world. You're used to the selected value or the selected text. Well, Windows Forms developers, you're pretty used to just getting the actual object that was bound to the combo box. And that's what we're going to do here. That's how it works in Silverlight. We actually say, grab the selected item. Because we bound a collection of customers, which is what we did up here, we're going to go in and cast that selected item back to a customer from object and grab the customer ID right there. Now we can follow the same type of process as we did up atop here in the unnavigated to. So what we're going to do is we're going to check, does the context currently have any entities that have been loaded? Because if we've already loaded sales orders, we want to go ahead and clear those out and load a fresh batch. Now, there's little different things you can do there with WCF RIA services. But in this example, the exercise is going to have you simply call into the entities for our sales order header, and we're going to clear them. All right. Otherwise, if that container, going back here in the if check, if this entity container is null, nothing's been loaded, we don't need to worry about it. So from there, we're then going to do the same thing we did earlier. We're going to go ahead and say, all right, let's go ahead and get the orders based upon, and we're going to pass in the customer ID. So we have our entity query, and we're going to feed that entity query into this get orders by customer ID, and then, of course, they tack on query onto the end of that. And that entity query is used by the load. So when I run it, you'll see that when we select a customer, that'll then automatically go out and load all the different orders for that particular customer. Pretty easy. The final thing you'll do in the lab exercise is you're going to go in, and we need a way to save changes. Now, one of the really nice features of WCF RIA services, in addition to data validation, which we'll cover next, is we have the ability to automatically track changes in our objects. And this is, having been through several real-world apps for clients, this is a big deal. Normally, you have to write this code yourself, and you have to track the dirty state. And that can get kind of tricky, especially if you have a data grid with different records. Now, in the lab exercise, you're only going to have to worry about one record at a time. So you're going to have a data form, which we'll run in just a moment. And when that data form changes, we want to update it. But the nice thing is, this technique I'm going to show here with the code also applies to data grids and list boxes and any collection control where you may allow the might allow the user to edit things as they go. So jumping on in here, we have our context. We're going to say, hey, has anything changed? So you'll notice right off the bat, it automatically tracks what's changed in this particular object. And that's pretty nice. If nothing's changed, well, we don't want to do anything, of course. But otherwise, we're going to go in and just simply call submit changes. Now, we're only going to have one object that would have been changed at this point based on our user interface. However, as mentioned earlier, this would work on a data grid, a list box, or anything that is a custom collection control. And so what this will do is if you changed four objects, it'll automatically track the state, whether they're deleted, inserted, updated, whatever it may be. WCF RIA services and this domain context, as long as you load the objects through the domain context, it tracks them automatically when they change, which is just an awesome feature to use. So in the submit changes, we're going to come in, and you'll notice here we're going to do a callback. So when it comes back, we're going to check the callback objects has air. And if has air is true, then we're going to give a different message. We're going to say, hey, we failed. Otherwise, we succeeded on our update of that particular sales order header object. Okay, and then from there, we're just going to show a message box, and we're not going to do much more than that at this point. We're not going to pass any other state. If we didn't have any changes, then it's automatically going to let the user know, hey, there's no changes available, so therefore there's nothing to do. All right, so after talking through all that piece, that kind of ends that exercise. And what we're going to do is let's give this a shot. So let's first off see if we build here. And once we build, we'll go ahead and run it, and it will basically show us the customers and the orders. All right, so let's run the Silverlight application. So I'm going to pop up IE9. And this should now go out and hopefully load our customers. And then when we select a customer, once this jitted, we'll try it here in just a second. Then it's going to go in and handle the orders for that customer. So let's see if we have any customers. Looks like we do. That's a good step. Okay, there we go. You can see there was a slight delay because it had to go out and load the orders. Now, could we have loaded the orders and everything up front? Absolutely, we could have. However, if you had a lot of customers and each one of those in turn had a lot of orders, that might be a really big payload coming back. And although this still uses WCF with binary over HTTP messaging coding, obviously you want to minimize the amount of data that's exchanged as much as possible. And you got to balance that. Of course, you don't want to be too chatty. So it just depends on what you're doing. But we can go in and select different customers. Most of these only have one order. But we'll go ahead and let's just go back up to Catherine Abel here. Now when we click on this particular order, you'll notice that our data form picks that up automatically. Well, we didn't really talk about that. So how did that work? Well, going back into the XAML, the data form control has a current item property. And the current item property was, in essence, linked to the data grid selected item. So let's go to properties real quick. All right, and once these load, I'll scroll down here to see if we can get them to load. Otherwise, we'll show the XAML. And for whatever reason, they're not loading there. So let's go over to the XAML, and I'll just show you there. So you'll notice that we have this current item, and current item is binding to a path of selected item. But, you know, what's the selected item? Where is that coming from? Well, that's coming from the data grid. So you'll notice the element name is the name of my data grid, which is orders data grid. So if you haven't done it before, this is called element to element binding. And again, something you would have done when you created the user interface in the lab exercise. All right, so let's go ahead and now that you've seen that, let's go ahead and try to run it. And then the last thing we're going to do is we're going to add, in the last exercise of the lab, we'll add some data validation. So let's view this in browser. And there's our customers. We'll go ahead and click on an order. And let's just come in. We'll click the edit icon here. And we'll put updated quantity or something. Even though I didn't, we're going to kind of pretend it did. Now, when I hit OK, it's actually not going to send this back to the server at this point. It is going to update the object, so let's hit OK. But if I refresh, you're going to see that that comment wouldn't have taken. And that's because I didn't handle the edit ending of the data form. Instead, I just said, OK, now the domain context is going to track that this object's changed. And what we want to do from here is we want to hit save, though. Now, what's nice about this is the user can now come in and make a bunch of changes and kind of batch all those up on the client side. WCF RIA Services is smart enough to know which objects have changed, and when you hit the submit button, it'll automatically go in and send those back to the server. So we can hit save here, and there you go. We have update succeeded. Let's just double check it real quick. We'll refresh. This will reload our objects. Go to Catherine, pick the order, and there we go. You can see that the quantity has been updated. So that's an example of we had a domain service. We just, through building, made the proxy, or the, what we call the domain context in this world. And then we used the domain context to write the code to call out and use the load method to call that particular those particular operations on our domain service. The final thing we're going to do in the last exercise, not including the bonus, is we're going to go in and we don't really have any data validation. And one of the kind of touted features of WCF RIA services is the object tracking. And that's a big deal. That is really, really nice. However, another big feature of it is that we can write our validation rules once and automatically have those validation rules be copied down to the client so we can share them across both environments. And that's, you know, that's a pretty big deal depending on how much you have to validate. And you can even do custom validation. That's what you're going to do in this last lab exercise. So I'm going to come in, and you'll notice that right now, if I scroll over just a little bit, we have a metadata class. We haven't looked at that. We're going to come to it in just a sec. And then we have our domain service. We've already looked at that. What I'm going to do is add in a new file that's named the exact same thing. So we have this AdventureWorks LT domain service.cs. I'm just going to do a rename so I can save that name real quick. And we're going to add in a new class now. And we're going to name it the same as the domain service. However, we're going to put in shared in the name. And I'll show you why that matters. So we're going to say .shared.cs. Now, the reason we're doing that is by putting shared in the name right before the extension, WCF RIA Services in the build process is smart enough to know that, hey, this is something I need to share, as it says, across my client and my server. And so now when we build, that generated code folder will actually pick up anything I put in this new class that I'm going to add right now. We're just going to add a static class called Date Validator, which I'll add in just a moment here. So let's go ahead and do that. All right, so here's my class. I'm going to go ahead and make it static. And again, at this point, we are on the server side. And by marking this as shared, though, it's automatically going to allow us to share that between both environments. All right, now there's a little bit of code in here for a method I'm going to write. So I'm going to go ahead and grab that. And this particular code, let me go ahead and resolve these namespaces here. This particular code allows us to come up and work with this validate date method. And let me see what we have going on here. Okay, yeah. AdventureWorks LT, we don't want to call it that. We're going to call this date validator. So you can see it caught the fact that I already have a class named that. And any classes I throw in here are going to be copied down to the Silverlight side. Now, if it has a problem with that, it'll actually let you know with some comments. But we're going to come in, and right now we're going to say, hey, I want to validate a date. And you'll notice that it passes in a couple parameters, including the actual date we want to validate, as well as something called a validation context. We're not going to really use the context at this point. But I want to do just a really simple custom rule to demonstrate how we can apply this and share it between Silverlight and WCF RIA Services really easily. So I have my date validator class, which is static. I have another static class called, or method I should say, called validate data, or date. And then in here, I'm going to make sure that the year is less than whatever the current date times year is. So if it is less than that, we're going to go ahead and return less than or equal to that. We're going to return success. If it's not, we're going to return a custom error message right here. All right, so that is an example of a, albeit simple, but a flexible for dates, custom validator that we can use within our code. And then I'm going to apply that in just a second. All right, so we have our date validator. Let's grab that. Let's come back over now into the metadata class. So I'm going to close. This is our domain service here. And here's my metadata class. Now, this is the class that was generated automatically. When I ran the wizard earlier, the wizard had a checkbox at the very bottom to say, do you want to enable generation of metadata classes? And you definitely, I always check that option. I think it saves you a lot of time, actually, because what it does is for each entity that you have, whether it's editable or not, it's going to go in and make a special metadata class for it. Now, what's this? Well, it's really just it is a copy of the properties that you'd be working with, and we can decorate these properties with custom attributes. In fact, they'll even show you an example right here. We can do required. You know, this field is required, pretty standard. We could do regular expressions if you like to do your patterns matching. String length. maybe in the database it's 32 characters, and you want to make sure that this property can't hold more than 32 characters so we don't truncate data. Pretty nice. And we can even do more. We can do a custom validator, we can do ranges, and there's some more stuff we can do. So what we're going to do is we're going to use a custom validation attribute. So we're not editing our customer, so I'm not going to worry about that one. That's just in the combo box. But I am going to come down into my sales order header and find the metadata class, which you can see right there. And the metadata class, we're going to go ahead and decorate the comment attribute. There it is right there. With, let's say we want to make this required. All right, you have to enter something. You can't just leave it empty. So that's the first thing. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to come down in and we want to add some validation for a ship date. So let's see if we can find that guy here. And or that's I want to do order date. So let's see if we can find order date. There it is. And what I want to do, though, is the custom shared class that we just created earlier, I now want to apply that directly onto my order date property. And there's also a ship date. We could do it on both if we wanted. But we're going to come back, and we're going to say custom validation. And then it's going to say, okay, what is the type of the class you want to invoke to call this? So we're going to say type of, and we had date validator. Okay, and then the other thing I have to supply it is what's the method that we want to call. Well, I think it was called validate date. That's the one. So we just put that as a string value. And we say validate date. Okay, now that's it. Now if I build, because the date validator class was in the shared file, that automatically gets copied down to the Silverlight client, which is pretty cool. Easy way to share business rules. But we also now make sure that the comment is required, and we also make sure that our order date doesn't have a year that's, you know, greater than the current year that we're working with. All right, and that's how we can do custom validation. And like I said, there's a ship date down in here right there. We could add it there if we want. You know, it could work with any date. But that's all we're going to do for that exercise, and that's kind of the process you'll go through for that. So let's go ahead and try to build. And assuming we build, you'll now see when I pull up the app that we're going to have some custom stuff. So let's see here. Oh, yeah. By default, sometimes when you create the class, since it's in a web project, you might get this using system web. We actually don't want that. So we're going to close that file, reopen, and delete it. So let me go ahead and do that. Okay. And let's build. All right, so as this builds again, we're going to pull it up. We'll do the same thing we did before. We'll select a customer from the combo box. We'll click on an order, and then we'll edit the order. But I'm going to go ahead and leave the comment blank, and we can try to put in a future year on the order date, and we should get some nice built-in validation logic, even though I never touched the Silverlight client with that validation. So let's go ahead and give it a shot. All right, so we'll go ahead and pull up the browser here. And once it loads, we should get some customers. There we go. And let's pick one we didn't do before. So let's pick the second one here, Christopher Beck. Click on the order, and we'll edit. All right, now you'll notice that OK, right off the bat, you know, I can't even do anything because I've tried to edit something, but there's no properties that have been changed. So I'm going to come in, and you'll notice comments now bolded, by the way, kind of giving an indication it's required. So we're going to take that out. I'm going to hit OK here. Okay, and we instantly get built-in validation, which is just really cool, I think, because I didn't have to write any of this, per se. Just put the required attribute. And it says the comment field is required. All right, now that's the default error message. Just to show you, if I wanted, I could come back into my metadata class, and there's an error message property. So let's go back up to that required attribute. And we could come into here, and let's go to the second overload. And you'll see error message right there. So we could say error message equals, you know, this is my custom error message. Now I'm going to go ahead and just leave it as it was because that was pretty good, what it had. But it's very easy to go into any of these attributes and add your own custom error messages into them. So let's go back into here, and you'll see that work. Now let's go edit again. We'll go ahead and leave the comment so that it can validate. And let's come down to the order date, and I'm going to change this to, say, 2024, far into the future. And let's hit OK. And there we go. So it says the date must be less than or equal to the current year. Now, where did that error message come from? Well, that one, if you noticed, was added into the shared class. So this is the error message, and this is in that date validator that we created. So the date must be less than or equal to the current year. And pretty much whatever you return in this validation result object, that's what it'll show by default in controls like the data grid, the data form, and a few others. So very nice, we get instant validation built in. All right, so if we go in and fix that, we can go back to what it was, which I think was 2004. Let's go change the comment to something new, new comment, exclamation. Hit OK. You can see now we're valid, and now we can hit the Save button here to go ahead and do the validation. And what's nice about this is not only validating on the client side, but it's also performing that same validation on the server side before it tries to do anything fancy with the Entity Framework model or update the database, which is obviously a good thing. All right, so that ends that exercise and shows kind of the whole process between these three or four exercises here, where we have the creation of the Entity Framework model, which talks to the database. We created the domain service, which wraps the Entity Framework model. And then from there, we went in and then kind of switched gears to the client side, and we used Silverlight and the domain context that was automatically generated as we built to go ahead and call that service and perform our updates or selects. And then finally, we obviously just went through the process of doing custom validation within our project. Now, I'm going to show you one more thing, which is in the bonus exercise. And the reason I want to show this is because it's a good example of some different things you can do within WCF RIA services, because it may be that you don't want to use Link to SQL, or you don't want to use Entity Framework, or maybe you do, but you don't want all that code to be in the RIA service. So let me go ahead and open up the bonus project here. All right, now as this opens, you're going to see it's the same thing we just did. It's going to have all that logic and all that, but instead, I like to use a repository class. Some people call it a data repository or your data access layer, and there's other names. But I'm going to call it my repository, and it's responsible for inserts, updates, deletes, because I want a reusable object that I don't have to go through a service sometimes to get. You know, I may have an ASP.NET application, Windows Forms, where you can just call that object directly, in the case of ASP.NET, right from the server, from maybe the global assembly cache or something. So in this project, what we have is some pre-created objects for you to just walk through. And this is the very last part of the lab, and like I said, the bonus exercise. So there's a customer repository, and this is going to inherit from a repository base. So you'll see it's just really simple. Here's the interface. Here's the class that implements it, and it just has the code in it to do exactly what we did earlier, but we did it in the domain service. So now what we're going to do is abstract all that code out of the service and make this code more reusable, easier to maintain, more testable, all that good stuff. Okay, there's also another one here, which is a sales order repository. And this particular class is responsible for getting the orders and updating. So obviously that's the two things we did in our user interface. And so that particular code will handle everything we need for an updater, a select on our sales order objects, sales order header objects officially. Okay, and then those inherit from repository base. So I'll let you look through that code as you go through the bonus lab exercise. The key part here, though, and this is something that's really important for those of you that maybe you don't want to use Link to SQL or any framework, maybe using in Hibernate or one of the many Plinko, one of the many frameworks out there that you can use to call a database. You know, maybe you want to use raw ADO.NET, for all I know. Well, RIA Services doesn't lock you down to just Entity Framework or Link to SQL. In fact, you can do whatever you want. So let's go ahead and I'm going to open up the domain service here. We're going to take a little closer look at this and we'll wrap up. All right, so I have my AdventureWorks Lite domain service, just like we did before. But if you recall earlier, we actually had a Link to Entities object that this inherited from. Well, now we don't want that because maybe I'm not using Entity Framework, like I said earlier. Maybe I'm using something else, or maybe I am using Entity Framework because we are in this lab. But I don't want to put all that code right in my operations for my domain service, make it more reusable again. So you'll notice now that get customers looks the same, but it simply calls into an instance of this customer repository and calls that get customers method that you saw. Coming on down, here's our get orders by customer ID that we looked at earlier. And then finally, we have the update method that's called. And this handles all the code we need separately in the repository class, which makes it really, really nice to work with. And again, much more maintainable and reusable. So when you get started with WCF RIA Services, it's certainly easier to just wrap the domain service around Link to SQL or Entity Framework models. But as you get more into it and into a more thorough architecture, you may want to go in and break out your code into a repository class. And that's absolutely possible. This example works, and you'll be able to run it as you go through the lab exercise. So that's a wrap-up on working with WCF RIA Services. And I hope that gives you a better feel for the different benefits that they offer.